This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday. Hope you're enjoying your weekends. I am Jeff Mellor. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. White Sox Weekly every Saturday, 2 hours prior to your pregame coverage beginning today. We will have a 5 o'clock pregame show with the White Sox in Pittsburgh taking on the Pirates as they crushed the Buccos 10-1 to start off the second half of the Major League Baseball season in style last night, powered by Luis Robert's best game of the season. He was 2-for-2 with a couple of walks, reached base all 4 times. Fantastic catch in the outfield. He stole a base. He also homered, and it was a very nice performance for Luis Robert. You do wonder if other teams around Major League Baseball are taking notice, as he has certainly been somebody who has been in the rumor mill when it comes to trade discussions for quite some time now. And performances like last night will only expedite, I think, Robert's exits from the South Side. Not saying I want that, but where the White Sox are at organizationally, it certainly makes sense if they get an offer that they like. Chris Getz, I think, will certainly be amenable to the possibility of trading the White Sox star center fielder who played up to his full potential last night. Great show in store for you today. We are expected to be joined here by Sergio Santos, the former White Sox player and current manager down at AAA Charlotte. He should be joining us here momentarily, so he's going to kick off the show here on White Sox Weekly. Brooke Fletcher, who covers the White Sox for CHSN, scheduled to join us at 4 o'clock. We'll get her thoughts on what's going on with the White Sox with the clubhouse access that she'll have today. She'll get us up to date on what's going on there. She also was in Atlanta covering the All-Star game, so I'll talk to her about that as well. And also get you caught up on what happened with the White Sox organization with the Major League Baseball draft, which just occurred last weekend on Sunday, Monday. So we'll get you caught up. Lots of fun stuff to do. And also some 2005 reunion memories, as we had a fantastic weekend out at Wrigley Field last weekend. So lots to do here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Mellor. As I mentioned, we're going to kick the show off this week with a man who has been a star, probably unbeknownst to him, for our content purposes on the White Sox radio network, because by my count, the Charlotte Knights manager, Sergio Santos, has made at least 7 appearances. Now, not live, but through his videos breaking the news to so many prospects across the White Sox organization that their lifelong dream is indeed coming true. Sergio Santos, the manager of the Charlotte Knights, joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Sergio, I want to say a big heartfelt thank you, because you have been making programming quite easily over the past couple of months on the White Sox radio network.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Look, that's, you know, making those videos and kind of giving that news is why we put in the long hours here in player development. I mean, it's just such an incredible feeling that, you know, you get to break the news that a kid realizes his dream. So those are always fun, and hopefully we continue to do a good job and keep making those call-ups.
Well, it's a great job, I will tell you, because every time I certainly get a little bit choked up, because it is so cool. You know, you've lived it, but now having the opportunity to, in some ways, you know, I have to imagine this. You know, I've talked to Darren Jackson about this quite a bit on the games, and everybody I've talked to, like, when they reflect on it, those moments, the news you're delivering to all these players, by my count, against 7 so far this year, it is a moment in their life that they will never forget. That's got to be pretty cool.
That's incredible. I mean, like I said, that's why we have so much passion in doing what we do, and you know, sitting on this side of the seat, you know, there's so much more that went into it that not a lot of people know, right? So it's not only just for the player per se, but like, they can't throw batting practice themselves, or they can't throw a bullpen off a wall. Like, there's so many people that had a hand, whether it was, you know, mom, dad, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, grandma, grandpa. Like, it definitely takes a village. And so You know, I try to do my best because I know it's such a life-changing moment that, you know, I know they're going to remember it for the rest of their lives, and I just want to make that moment so special for them because they deserve it.
Sergio Santos, the manager of the Charlotte Knights, joining me. Also the reigning champion of the Southern League, of course, for White Sox fans who are unfamiliar. He was the manager of the Birmingham Barons when they won the Southern League last year, so still has that feather in his cap, at least for the remainder of this season. Charlotte Knights playing better baseball as of late, too. You're doing a great job with the videos, I will tell you that, Sergio. I'm just curious, who tells Sergio Santos that he's going to get to deliver this life-changing news to the players? Is it Chris Getz who just gives you a call and says, hey, we're going to call this guy up? When do you get the news that a player has received the promotion?
Yeah, I mean, it can vary. It could be an hour before the game. It could be, you know, on a day off. And I usually get the phone call from Josh Barfield. And then if I don't get it from him, then Paul Yonish will reach out to me and say, hey, this is the move that's happening. And then as soon as that's done, you know, I reflect a little bit about my relationship with that player and how the best way to go about, you know, giving them that messaging.
Okay, so you reflect on your relationship with the player. That makes all the sense in the world. And again, if I'm wrong, let me know, but I think it's seven, right? I think there's seven players who you've delivered the news to so far this year. So that's excellent. It felt like, and I could be completely wrong. I know it's great for all these players, but when you told Tim Elko that he was going up, that one seemed a little bit more special. Am I wrong about that?
No. Yeah. You know, and I told Timmy, he's such an incredible young man. And I got to meet his parents in Jacksonville a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it was incredible. His mom wanted to give me a hug, and the dad was telling me thank you. But, like, I wanted to tell them thank you and that they did an amazing job. Timmy is just – he's one of these guys who, you know, is not the loudest in the clubhouse, but, like, everybody listens to him. He comes with an incredible attitude. He's positive every single day. You know, he enjoys himself when we're not getting to work, and when it's time to work, he's the first one in line to get after it. So – having him all last year and just the conversations we had throughout the season last year and just kind of wondering, you know, if he's going to get an opportunity. And like I told him, I said, man, there's so many things out of our control. Like, I need you to worry about your process and kind of what you do day in and day out. We don't know what's going to happen down the line, but what you can do is just put yourself in the best position that if that opportunity ever does arise, like, you're ready and you take off.
Charlotte Knights manager Sergio Santos joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Sergio, so I'm just curious, is there any bit of bittersweetness to it when you're delivering the news? Because for some of these guys, this might be like, you know, you're no longer going to have these day-to-day interactions. So while in a lot of ways it's a great achievement for them, for you, is it bittersweet at all? Because, you know, now they're going off to the majors. You're kind of like a parent sending your child off to college in some ways where you know the relationship is changing. So is there any bittersweetness for you in that?
There is, of course. I mean, you know, I take pride in bonding with my players and interacting with them and getting to know them as human beings. And you know, it allows me to help understand them better as a baseball player. So it is a little bittersweet where, you know, like I tell them it's, you know, I hope to see you again, but I don't hope to see you again, you know, if that makes sense. But it's great. Like, I actually, just yesterday, I was in conversations with Chase Mydrop, Colson Montgomery, and Timmy Elko. So even though they're in Chicago, they're doing their thing. I guess just being the parent of me, I reach out just to make sure they're doing well. And if there's anything they need on my end, then, you know, that's why I'm here.
Pretty cool. Sergio Santos joining us here on White Sox Weekly. What was your first reaction when you saw that the White Sox were promoting Grant Taylor straight from Double A to the majors? Were you like, hey, I could have used a triple-digit flamethrower coming out of my pen for at least a couple of weeks? Or were you also maybe like a little upset with Karros for invading your turf a little bit? He was the one who got to deliver the message to Grant Taylor. What was your thought about that?
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously, look, don't get me wrong. I would love to have Grant Taylor here for a couple of weeks, you know, throwing that 100-mile-an-hour fastball. But, you know, I got to see Grant in spring training. And you just knew in spring that he was just different, right? Like, the stuff was electric. Like, he looked like a big leaguer already. He needed some stuff to polish up. And he did that in Birmingham. And you know, but by no means, we want these guys to be Chicago White Sox baseball players and help us win an AL Central title. So if they stop by Charlotte, great. And if they don't, man, more power to them. And you know, I'm here rooting for them.
Sergio, that's an interesting point, and it makes all the sense in the world. But I'm just curious, the competitor in you as the manager of the Knights, and I mentioned you won the Southern League last year with the Barons. But, of course, ultimately, the farm system exists to obviously help the Major League Ball Club. So what's the balance for you as the manager of the AAA team? You're competitive, I'm sure. I know you play in the majors. You want to win baseball games. But at the same time, you know, ultimately, your job is helping these players become the best players they can and not always winning each and every game for your Charlotte Knights.
That's exactly right. And especially here in AAA, I mean, it seems like we have a move every 2 days. There's a new guy on my roster. There's a new guy off my roster. So it makes it a little bit more challenging, but not impossible, right? Like, I tell my players all the time, it's whoever is in this clubhouse is who I will take to battle with every single day. And as long as they show up and can be fundamentally sound and play the game the right way, play it hard, I'll take my chances up against anybody. And to their credit, they've done a fantastic job. Like, we have a really good mix of some older veteran signees who have big league time, who could be bitter about their situation and angry, but, you know, they're not. They're looking to make the most out of their opportunity. They're hoping they get another shot. And it's just that. It's just kind of, like I said, getting to know them. And you know, I can't throw for them. I can't hit for them. I can't do any of these things. But, like, what I realized early on in managing is what I can do is create an environment, create a space where these guys are looking forward to come to the park every day. This is such a tough game that is based on failure. You're going to fail. It's going to happen. Adversity is going to hit. And so if you unnecessarily beat yourself up even more, it makes the season even longer. So that's where I take a lot of pride in keeping my team in check, making us worry about what we can control, focusing on that, and kind of being present, right? Like, I tell them all the time, be where your feet are. I know your mind, your thoughts are going to wander, but, like, you're doing yourself a disservice by doing that. So, like, let's take care of today because we don't know what tomorrow holds. And to their credit, they have done a tremendous job with that.
Charlotte Knights manager Sergio Santos joining me for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. Sergio, so Noah Schultz is starting for you today. Of course, he's a highly anticipated player in the Sox organization for White Sox fans. He just had the opportunity to participate in the Futures game in Atlanta. Did you have an opportunity to talk to him about the experience? I'm sure he was probably slightly disappointed because the results didn't go his way, but was he able to appreciate what it was like to actually take part in the experience?
He was excited. He said he had a great time. And like I told him, it's just an amazing experience. And as far as the outing, I looked at him and I said, good, you know, good. Like, you're hitting adversity. Good. Like, this is, you know, I'm big into stoicism. So I quote to these guys, Marcus Aurelius, a lot, right? And what stands in the way becomes the way. And it's like, okay, you know, Noah Schultz has never hit adversity like this, you know, I'm assuming in his whole baseball career. And it's great that he's doing it at the AAA level instead of the big league level, but you really find out about yourself when you're going through adversity. And I think he's realizing that, obviously, his stuff is electric and it's outstanding, but major league hitters are really, really good. And so stuff alone isn't just going to mean that you're going to have great results and you're going to cruise through a big league career. It's the execution of your pitches, your game planning, all this stuff. And so I challenged him. I said, like, good, I know it sucks. I know it stinks, but sit with it. And when you're sitting with it and you're reflecting on your game, like, what can you do different to be better? And so Scott Aldred, our pitcher coach, and him, they sat down, they got a game plan, and it's just about competing. Every time he takes him out, he competes. And so I have no doubt in my mind he's going to figure it out, and he's going to have a long big league career.
Sergio, last thing as I let you go, and again, thanks so much for the time. I know you're busy today. You guys are playing later tonight. Noah Schultz is pitching. You played with some of the members of the 2005 White Sox team when you arrived in 2010, 2011, specifically A.J. Pierzynski, Paul Konerko, Mark Burley. Did you have an opportunity to watch any of the reunion weekend last weekend?
I absolutely did, and it just brought such a big smile to my face. I actually talked with Burley. You know, I shot him a text, and I said, man, congratulations on the statue and everything else. It's so well-deserved. I mean, being able to be his teammate, you know, for 2 years with the White Sox and then, you know, with the Blue Jays as well, is my man was the ultimate pro. He took the ball, no excuses, no complaints, and just got, you know, went out there and shoved. I got to see Paulie this spring training, which was awesome. I got to see AJ as well, so you know, it's just fun. It just brings back so many memories. You know, I was a rookie in 2010, and these guys had obviously won the World Series and been in the big leagues for a while. But, you know, they treated me as one of their own, and they welcomed me with open arms. And so, you know, I let Burley know. I said, man, that's one of the things I remember the most is just you really making me feel welcomed. He's just that good of a human being.
Love it. Sergio, thanks so much for the time again. Really appreciate it on the game day here. And keep on doing what you're doing. And I promise you, we will keep on playing those videos because they are it's great content for us. And I know you love delivering the news. So you're doing a fantastic job with the players and the videos. So keep it up, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. That is Sergio Santos, again, the manager of the White Sox AAA affiliate, the Charlotte Knights. And, of course, he led the Birmingham Barons to the Southern League title last year. So he obviously is having a great deal of success. Truly appreciative of carving out a little bit of time for us this afternoon because the Knights do play later on tonight, and I know he's very busy. So on game day, it'll be pretty cool to get some time with him. Hey, Sox fans, take advantage of one of our best offers this season. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. Includes all fees. Purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, getting set for game number 2 of Sox and Pirates later today. First pitch coming your way at 5:40. Up next, if you missed some of what went down last night, we'll recap a little bit of that and talk about Luis Robert Jr.'s future right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to 3, ESPN Chicago.
This is swing and a line drive, center field, base hit. Benintendi around third. Cruz will fire toward the plate. It's late. And Roberts got a single and an RBI, and it's 3-0. 2-2 is hit in the air pretty well out into left center. Robert tracking. He dives. He caught it. Oh, what a catch by Luis Robert Jr.
You will not see a better catch by any outfielder this year, because it can't be done any better. Full speed sprint, full layout, diving toward the warning track. What a play by Luis Robert Jr.
He leads off the fourth, and he pummels one deep to left, and it's gonna go! It's 4-0.
Well, you make a great catch and lead off the next inning, you know it's automatic. You gotta go deep. Keep the attention on you.
Big night for Luis Robert last night, his best game of the season. Homer, stolen base, that great defensive play that you heard right there last night. He was 2-for-2 with a couple of walks, scored 3 runs. Really nice outing by Luis Robert Jr. Do have some news regarding the White Sox as they have placed Shane Smith on the injured list with an ankle injury. He'll be on the 15-day IL. It's the move is retroactive to Wednesday, but obviously that was sustained, or I guess it wasn't immediately known that he sustained that in the All-Star game, but apparently that was obviously the case. So Shane Smith hits the IL for the White Sox. Adrian Hauser will be on the mound today. The White Sox have recalled Brooks Baldwin. I'm sorry, he's back from his rehab stint. Will Robertson is headed to Charlotte for the Knights as they just acquired Robertson in a trade with the Blue Jays about 10 days ago or so. So Brooks Baldwin back, Shane Smith to the injured list, and Will Robertson down to AAA Charlotte. But back to Luis Robert. Last night was just a great thing to see for the White Sox. He was on the injured list himself with that hamstring injury that he was dealing with. So for him to come back after the All-Star break and show that the legs look good, he feels good, making great defensive plays, stealing bases, and also going deep, you know, if he can continue to put together outings like he did yesterday for the next 12 days or maybe even less than that, because the Major League Baseball trade deadline is on July 31st, there is, I think, certainly a strong possibility that Luis Robert Jr., if he does anything close to what he did last night for the next week or 10 days, I think he will certainly be somebody who is highly likely to be traded. Of course, the White Sox have a couple of team options for him for the 26 and 27 season. But if Chris Getz hears the asking price that he has met, I think it's certainly likely that the White Sox could be moving on from Luis Robert if he can give you performances like he did last night. The reality is that where they're at as an organization, you know, they do want to turn things around, but at the same time, if a player like Luis Robert is available to a lot of teams that are in the wild card race, or maybe even more importantly, teams that have true designs on trying to compete and win a World Series this year, I think he can add quite a bit. Again, defensively, what he's capable of in center field, it's gold glove caliber each and every night. We know he can be a threat on the base paths. He has been this year. And then if he is an absolute terror against left-handed pitching, the question is, can he be viable against right-handers on a consistent basis? Because against lefties, he's an all-star player. He's got a four, or at least coming into last night, he had a 403 on base. I haven't looked at the most recent updated stats from yesterday, but of course he reached base all four times. So the on-base percentage is certainly over 400 against lefties. And so, you know, at the very least, of course, that's the small side of the platoon split, so it's not ideal. But I think if you're a team like the Dodgers or the Mets or the Phillies, and you could use a player like Robert in center field to be a great defensive player, and you know is going to be a real threat against left-handed pitching, maybe not ideal against righties, but, you know, and it would be a luxury item, but we know that teams like the Dodgers and Phillies and Mets often can afford those luxury items. I think Luis Robert Jr., if he continues to play as well as he did last night, will certainly be likely traded. I think that's the reality of the situation. If he can, like I said, if he can put together a hot streak, and I think that's probably the best case scenario. I love watching Luis Robert Jr. play, but where the White Sox are at, even if you're picking up the option next season, you know, what's your plans for him ultimately? Because it doesn't happen overnight. Even though I talked about all these young players who have arrived so far this year and are having some success, the White Sox still have a long way to go. The reality is that they're still well under 500, you know, significantly so. And Luis Robert Jr., at 27 years old, soon to turn 28, actually, in a couple of weeks on August 3rd. Well, he's probably not somebody who is going to be likely on your roster when you finally turn it around and are in your competitive window. Again, next year, I'm hoping the White Sox are much better off this year. But even still, you're probably looking at a 500 potential roster, right? Like, that's what you're probably shooting for, because right now the White Sox are 33-65. So you're 32 games under, 98 games into the season. And so no matter where they finish this year, it's still going to take some significant turnaround, and they're on a great pace to finish well above where they were at last year when they set what was a modern-day Major League record with 121 losses. So they've already kind of shown improvement from that step, and we've seen a lot of good young pitchers arrive here, and it's their first Major League season. Talked about Shane Smith hitting the IL here. The innings that he's putting on his arm, you know, for the first time this year is the first time he's seeing that number and at the Major League level. So a lot of these players, it's about acclimating. You know, we just had Sergio Santos on to lead the show off, talk about kind of acclimating to the big leagues. They have to go through these growing pains, right? Players like Shane Smith, players like Mike Vassell, a player like Jonathan Cannon, who already has, you know, had some major league experience, but they're going through this growing process. And as they're suffering these growing pains, the White Sox hopefully can turn things around. But the truth is that Luis Robert Jr., if he can bring back some significant prospect capital, that's probably the best move for the long-term health of the organization. Now, what exactly, you know, I think part of the reluctance has been because Robert hasn't played well enough to really entice teams to go out and make a move for him. And at the same time, it hasn't been, you know, a spot where Chris Getz has felt like you need to move Luis Robert Jr. if nobody's going to be willing to give you something that you think makes your team better. He's still a better than starting caliber center fielder on your roster. And so if nobody's going to give you the actual price that you're looking for, you're not going to just move him to move him. You do have him under team control for the next couple of years. And even though the amounts might not be you might not be getting a huge discount per se, the truth is that I think if Luis Robert Jr. hit the free agent market, I think he's probably going to get 2 to 3 year deal for over what the team options would be. You know, once you hit free agency, usually there will be, especially a player like Luis Robert Jr. who has so much tantalizing ability, a player like that hits the free agent market, some team is going to get into a bidding war with another team and probably find Luis Robert's representation would probably find an offer that would exceed what the White Sox would have to pay for the next 2 years, the next two team options for 26 and 27. So, you know, it just makes sense to hang on to Luis Robert Jr. until you get the exact asking price that you're looking for if you're Chris Getz. But again, with more games like he had yesterday over the next week or so, I think some teams will probably blink and meet the asking price that Chris Getz is looking for. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark next Friday, June 25th, as the White Sox take on the Cubs at 6:40. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show presented by Rate. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Speaking of improving the organization, something that is the lifeblood of any good baseball team is how well they draft and develop those players. And White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, Mike Shirley, met the media after the White Sox made their first-round pick and last Sunday when they went ahead and landed a high school shortstop with the 10th overall pick. We'll let you hear from the White Sox Scouting Director on why the White Sox were enamored with him and what some of the process was with the players that they selected. We'll do that next right here on White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we are getting set for White Sox and Pirates game number 2 at PNC Park today. The White Sox and Pirates will play 3 before the Sox head to Tampa to take on the Rays on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then they'll come back home after an off day on Thursday. Hey, Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own hamburger. July's winner will work with the Chicago White Sox head chef to design and name their own hamburger that will be sold in the ballpark. The winner will also receive 25 tickets to the CIBC Fan Box to host their family and friends. Enter at whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly, and as I mentioned, the Major League Baseball draft did occur last weekend, and the White Sox made a selection with the 10th overall pick. They selected a high school shortstop by the name of Billy Carlson, who you will hear about from, at least thoroughly here, from White Sox amateur, the White Sox director of amateur scouting, Mike Shirley, who talked about Billy Carlson and why he was so appealing to the White Sox with the 10th overall pick.
You know, we talked, and you've talked to me and the group and everyone else about, you know, who we were looking at there, and I assume Billy Carlson was in the mix there, the shortstop you were talking about. How much do you like this pick in the first round here?
Super excited. The type of movers, the type of athletes that you chase in a draft that have high-end ability. You know, I'll be frank, the defensive shortstop is some of the best I've ever seen in the amateur ranks. He moves, the hand skill, the feet skill. I mean, it's a big time arm. I mean, he does so many things on the defensive side that are elite, the body, the way it's built, the way it's structured, the projection to it. He just touches so many points that you get excited about, the bat speed. He moves really easy. Sometimes the stride gets a little bit big, but as he gets stronger, that's all going to calm down. Just think about how mobile he is as he gets stronger, how that frame tightens up and really starts to control what he needs to do. When he touches it, the ball stays in the air a long time. Really good, efficient, we're using the opposite field of the gap. control winner. I mean, that face, the Hollywood, he's, you know, he does a lot of things a Southern Cal kid's supposed to do to get you excited about as a player. Always said, one of these days I wanted to take one of those Southern Cal shortstops because I think they're exciting. They put people in the C2. He's got highlight reel ability. So I'm super excited about Billy Carlson and glad the White Sox got that opportunity tonight.
I know it's not an official scouting grade, but just from the 10 or 11 minutes we talked to him, he's got a pretty good personality too, doesn't he? He seems to be a very outgoing, energetic kid.
Very confident. It's what you want, right? You got to believe in yourself to be great at this game. I think he's structured and wired to, you know, to function like that on a day in and day out basis, handle the pro lifestyle, know he's got to show up every day. I think he's wired and built like that. So, like I said, he's going to speak well. He's going to represent this organization. He's going to get after it. He's got a lot of runway to be a better player on top of, you know, the present skills he brings to the table.
Yeah, we talked to Billy a little bit ago, and he was clearly very upbeat about the offense development he's made in the last year with some different coaching. You kind of got into it a little bit. Just how did his bat kind of prove to you that this had a really high ceiling to it over the course of this past year? And also, how do you kind of project the guy who's this rangy, this clearly projectable, what it's kind of going to look like in the future in addition to what it's going to look like now?
We did. You know, Jeff Head, our strength and conditioning director, head of strength in that department, was really, you know, he when he went to Knoxville, we worked Billy out at the University of Tennessee late in the process. And we took Jeff and Ryan Fuller, myself, Chris Getz, went on a trip to Knoxville and had a pretty good workout. Billy was there and, you know, he just started to see what Jeff had a chance to watch him move, watch him run. You know, the entire team put a focus on what he was. You just start to see how unbelievable the athlete moves. You know, I've been doing this a long time from the scouting eye. And when you look at frames and bodies, you start getting a feel of the contextual growth the player can make as he adds mass. If they're wired and lean and they have like this wiry strength plus all the projection to them, you just get super excited about what the future could look like for Billy. So he just does a lot, guys. And I mean, it's just hard. You know, I'm excited for the White Sox. I feel like we've grown in this capacity to really want to take these high-end players and really develop them, and hoping great things are going to occur real soon.
And with having Jaden Foskey as a second-round pick, to have two prep bats, how did that kind of emerge as what was going to be an option for you? And how does it also shape your strategy later on that you're able to take kind of the ceiling picks up front like you were?
I mean, even with Jaden, I mean, obviously a kid we've known extremely long time. You know, you get a chance to have Jim Thome coach the kid for a couple of, you know, his high school career. And Jim Thome's a big part of our family, right? We all know the Hall of Famer, what a great man he is. His knowledge about hitting, his comprehension about baseball players. He's been around the best. He is the best. And, you know, he really believed in Jaden as well. And we think there's upside, there's strength. The kid has done so much in the last, you know, 12 months to really expedite his development in terms of strength. He's stronger. He's running better. He committed to running better. It's a short, compact stroke. It's leverage in the swing, ball jumps. He has great – the approach is good because he stays on pitches the other way. I always say the ability to use the other half and keep the bats alive. He's okay serving a single the other way. He understands how to get the loft in the middle of the field. His approach is more geared to the middle of the field. He does it easy. He does it short. Guys, he's a local kid, man. I've said all along, there's local kids we feel like they have the ability. The White Sox are going to be in there. This is our city, man. We believe in the people that live here. He's a fan. He's a White Sox fan. You know, we're not taking anything for granted. We think these players are worthy of this opportunity to be with us. So why not put them in their hometown? And I'm excited to have another hometown kid on the resume.
Yeah, Mike, I just wanted to ask kind of along those lines, the local kid, you know, there are a couple of South Suburban guys who are going to protect it in that range. Was Fowski a guy you kind of had your eye on long-term kind of thing, or how did that work out?
You know, our R&D department, you know, along with Ryan Fuller, they were super excited about Jaden as this thing began. When the meeting started last week, it was evident that a lot of people thought Jaden was one of the best prep left-hand hitters in the class. So the ability to capture him was super exciting for us as a whole. Plus, you know, he's been on our area code team. that thing that, you know, JJ, Rob Cummings, Garrett Guest, the group, the local Chicago group we put together, we manage, you know, it's foundational for us. We get to see him in the dugout in real live action. We get to coach him for that week in California amongst the best players. It gives us a lot of insight on what the player's makeup is, how they handle the adversity of jumping into that big time environment. And it's just, you get personal with them. And we feel like Jaden all along, you know, we got to California last year and we're telling him, hey, Mike, this is one of the best hitters there was. This guy can really do it. And so to land him tonight, it's a great opportunity for us.
Hey, Mike, if you can just then wrap up the evening with Kyle, just what, when did that pick as well?
Baseball player, the type of skills that from a shortstop, he just knows how to play. You know, it's interesting because you think about those underdogs, right? He had to start at a Division II. The way the transfer portal is working, the way these guys that were undervalued out of high school, they go to college, have a bunch of success, they end up at Georgia Tech. He tears that league up. Now he's a third-round draft pick. You talk about the makeup, the will to win. You care about winning. You understand how to play baseball. A lot of guys said maybe it's Chase Mydroth type player who knows how to play. It was, you know, and he touches Ryan Fuller's things of, you know, contact and decisions at a high level. And when you play shortstop, we feel like we're starting to touch the point of emphasis that we're trying to build out to have better baseball players, better bats, and guys understand how to win because we're chasing that winning component as well. So we really like the kid. He nailed the interview at the combine. We're talking about professional, well-spoken, intelligent, instinctual, all the things you try to capture, all that time we spend interviewing the players at the combine. We really felt good about the kid.
Just how do you kind of profile Jaden defensively? I know he's, you know, caught a little bit, you know, played outfield. What do you kind of see as his long-term fit? And, you know, how does what he can do offensively profile that as well?
You know what the best part is? You know what Jaden Fowski said? I'll do whatever you need me to do. That's the best part, right? That you have players that are willing to do whatever it takes to be pros and believe in themselves. Yes, he's caught, but guys, what he did with his run tool and how it played in his defensive profile and center field, this year's a high school player. That's most likely where we start him and really believe in the kid, knowing that you have that catch option as a part of it if we want to examine that route. But we also want to do whatever we can to make sure that bat that we really believe in is protected. It can be the most productive operation that he can afford. So, you know, that catching position has a chance to beat it up. So we going into this, we think center field is the best option at this point. And he did a great job working his tail off about increasing that run tool. And it's something he needed to do. The thing was, I think the player, when they're done with the summer circuit, they better have a concept of what they need to do. He went to work. He added the strength. He worked on the run tool. And he did the things it was going to take to expedite his place in line come to draft in 25. And I think he did a great job of that.
And with Carlson, you mentioned how his glove kind of gives you time to develop him offensively. Do you see him being someone who, you know, you take more of a measured pace with development? Do you see this as being a guy who rises quickly? Like, how do you approach someone who's, you know, got so much raw talent, you know, from the prep angle?
I think Billy will handle that. I mean, we'll take care of the kid. But think about when you play shortstop at that level, the ability to create and save runs can really have an impact. And it has an impact quickly on how your staff is handled, saving, you know, pitches, doing all the things that help win games. He's going to control that narrative. He's going to accept every challenge we give him. We'll be smart. Paul Janisch will control that pace. Josh Barfield, you know, Chris will oversee that. So we'll do a great job. But, you know, the kid will handle whatever we throw at him. And he's a great player.
Mike, you've mentioned that, you know, Chris Getz is focused a lot on up the middle profiles, which makes sense. Obviously, I think it's a system that also, you know, could use an infusion of power, right? So how do you kind of weigh those two things, right? When you're looking for up the middle talent that can kind of move out, but you're also kind of looking to put power into the system as well offensively.
I mean, like I said, the foundation of like decisions, contact, and damage, right? And you've heard Ryan talk about this, right? So when we look at these players, obviously you're trying to find players that touch it. Like with Jaden, like if you just use him, for example, it's decisions, contact, and he touches it with some juice. And trying to push the bat speed component is critical. Like Billy moves it extremely quick, right? We feel like we're starting to get the upside to do damage as well. Jaden moves it really quick. And you think about these bat speed grades that you can get through all the contextual development of technology. There's push behind that. There's push behind some of the one that we're playing in TrackMan environments. We're getting some exit velocities. We're getting the things that we believe in to grow that profile. So I think Chris is, it's important to Chris, though, the baseball player component, controlling the strike zone, making sure defensively that the pitching staff, which we know is a strength of the organization at this point, how do we protect that? How do we ensure that the health of the pitchers are growing, because we're protecting those arms with how we catch it every day?
Just, with Carlson's glove and his, athleticism, were there moments scouting him where it is kind of like, oh my God, where you talk about this being one of the best high school gloves you've seen of all time. What really kind of, do you have moments in the process that really stuck out to you about really seeing this as a next level talent?
Yeah, I think when we started, the interesting part of, we think about bat development, right? I mean, so when the high school player gets done with his junior year and he inserts himself into the pro landscape of that summer circuit, right? And you watch last summer how Billy, at the start of the circuit, like, you could tell he wasn't used to seeing that type of velocity every day. By the time we got to the end of the circuit, he was one of the best hitters. He started to really define himself, show the capacity to make adjustments. You saw the at-bats improve. You see the bat speed starting to use leverage. He started to understand how to use the middle of the field and his opposite half really clean. And he kind of took off towards the end of the summer. You know, everybody talks about they went into Miami late in the year. PBR had a big event. Billy goes big home run in that. People start to see the power start to come together. You know, we think there's the strength training component was really big for him as he naturally morphs into the strength. We just think there's a runway here. He moves different. It's that athlete we all chase.
Again, that's White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting, Mike Shirley, talking about their draft this past week. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll let you hear from Joe Creedy. Joe Creedy! We'll do that next right here on ESPN 1000.
Cap and Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Joe Creedy!
Yes, indeed, Joe Creedy. We'll let you hear from Joe Creedy, who was at the 2005 reunion weekend last Friday and Saturday here in a moment. White Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Monday, July 28th for Christmas in July, presented by Kordak. Receive a limited edition Aaron Rowan Christmas vacation themed bobblehead when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Speaking of Aaron Rowan and his former teammate, Joe Creedy was at the reunion weekend and was fun catching up with Joe. Here's some of his thoughts on what it was like just reconnecting with some of his old teammates.
Yeah, I love it. Whether people talk about it or not, we still have that in our back pocket. As Canerco said, they can never take that away from us. But I love it. I mean, even when I talk to fans, I go to Cardinal games every now and again, and people don't know who won in 05. They knew who won in 04 and 06, but not 05. But it's fine by me. I mean, I have no problem with it, but it's definitely great to be back, to see these guys that, I haven't seen since I last played, I think, in 09. But it's definitely a great reason to come back and celebrate and share good stories and how much fun that we used to have in the clubhouse and stuff. It's always fun to have this in your back pocket.
I was wondering, how the stories just flow, or do you guys come back together and just pick up like more times?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Still a lot of yelling and making fun of everybody and what you're wearing and what you're doing. But, it's like we never left.
Is that part of the secret sauce of this team, just the way the personalities gelled?
I think so. I think with the kind of personalities that we had in that clubhouse, we had some guys that were really serious and, down to play the game, but we had quite a few guys that were ready to have some fun and keep guys loose. It seemed like there was always one guy that could see something in a player on the field. This guy's a little uptight, or this guy's a little too tense, or this guy's struggling. And there was always a guy there that would take somebody aside and say, hey, this is what we notice. And everybody was receptive to it. It was the biggest thing. And you get in this game and you'll have guys that are not receptive to criticism. But not one of those guys were not receptive to criticism. We all made fun of each other and we all made sure everybody stayed in line. Oh, God, yeah. Well, I hit 250, so I was a target of a lot. But yeah, oh, definitely. Like Rowan would take me to the side, or AJ, and you know, whether it was something to try to, you know, I was always on edge just because I was in 240, 250 a lot of the year, and you know, I was upset a lot of the time, and you know, it just kind of started snowballing, and they would notice it and be like, all right, you need to either get in the cage or we need to go out to a bar or something. We need to get you to relax somehow and play this game and have fun.
That's one thing about you guys. You guys didn't just play on the field. You played off the field too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you have to. It's such a long season, and you know, you're at the field so many times, you know, what, 162 games, and it's a long season. I mean, it's a grind, and there's a lot of days I didn't want to hit. I didn't want to field a ground ball, but it's having that type of personality around, you know, made it fun to where, you know, we were having fun on the field in the clubhouse, and we had a little fun off the field. Oh, he was definitely the glue, you know, that kind of made sure everybody wasn't doing anything too stupid. Even though he was part of it sometimes. But no, he was definitely the captain. You know, it was a rowdy ship, but he was able to keep us on course and get us to the promised land.
Fun catching up with Joe Creedy last weekend, last Friday night and Saturday, as the White Sox had their 2005 reunion weekend celebrating the 20th anniversary of that championship team. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we will go to Pittsburgh and check in with Brooke Fletcher of CHSN, get the latest on what's going on pregame for the White Sox and Pirates. And also, Brooke covered the All-Star game, so we'll pick her brain on that experience as well in Atlanta, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Captain Jay Hood here with Howard Ankin.
Ah, sounds of summer.
An accident about to happen.
Whoa!
Come on, it's a freaking slip and slide.
You mean slip and fall?
Water may sound seemingly harmless to you guys, but anyone who's experienced a slip and fall injury at work, in a store, or at their apartment building knows just how serious they can be. If you've been injured, call 312-6MILLION.
Howard is our attorney on the Cap and Jay Hood Show, weekday morning 7 to 10 on ESPN 1000.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Illinois. T's and C's apply.
Did you know VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served?
It was a personal goal of mine to try and purchase a home before the age of 30. I do remember the first moment I walked into my home. I remember that real clearly, actually. I walked in and I could hear my footsteps echo off the back wall. And the first thing I thought in my head was, man, furniture is gonna be real expensive. The VA not requiring any down payment prior to buying the home is actually really beneficial because it allowed me to take that money I had budgeted to go out and buy furniture, food, cleaning supplies, pretty much everything I needed. Using the loan itself wasn't too complicated. It's very user-friendly, and the VA was really helpful showing me what I needed to do and how I would go about it. Purchasing a home is scary. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of things that are new to you and that you won't understand, but ultimately it's not impossible, and they make it so that anybody can do it. Oh, I'm extremely glad I did it. It was one of the best things I could have done for myself, I think.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
Recap the game, Cap and Jay Hood, weekday mornings at 7.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for game number 2 of 3 in Pittsburgh. Real quick, before we go out to Pittsburgh, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTVC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, so let's head out to Pittsburgh. I wanted to bring Brooke Fletcher in with a lot of good news regarding the best performance of the year from Luis Robert Jr. last night. But unfortunately, a flurry of roster moves, and the headliner right now is that the White Sox have placed Shane Smith on the 15-day injured list with an ankle. Brooke, can you give us a little more information on what exactly happened with Shane?
Yeah, so we spoke with Will earlier today, and I guess it happened on Thursday when he was running, and it's on that lead leg. And so Will said it just makes it difficult for him to make his next start. So they're obviously going to stay err on the side of caution, but they said he's still going to be able to throw. But it is an unfortunate situation because he just came off of this high of playing in the All-Star game, right? But they do have some depth pieces. It does, timing-wise, it could help that Davis Martin, he is working his way back, and he's close to returning. So just to slot him in there as a starter. So, but it is an unfortunate situation given the high that Shane Smith is coming off of with that All-Star game.
Brooke Fletcher covers the White Sox for CHSN. She was in Atlanta for the All-Star game. While a lot of us who cover baseball, Brooke, we're getting a little R&R, kind of decompressing. You were busy working away. How was the All-Star experience for you?
It was awesome. It was my first All-Star game that I got to cover. I've been there as a fan, and it just gives you a totally different perspective. I mean, you see, you know, Shane Smith there, but you see some of the biggest names in the league just kind of all come together and see them brush shoulders and how they interact with each other. It's just, it was awesome. And being from Atlanta, grew up there. And so just to see, you know, them highlight Atlanta, the culture, it was a full circle moment. It was really cool. And I thought they did a great job just kind of showcasing down in Atlanta.
What was the big storyline for you? Was it Cal Raleigh, or was there something else that stood out for you as well?
Gosh, I mean, I always love, like, you know, being able, I understand how hard it is to make it in this league, but let alone make it to the All-Star game. And so you see the Freddie Freeman, you see some of the household names, Aaron Judge, but like seeing the guys like Shane Smith and the guys that are there for the first time, even Jacob Mizorowski, you know, he was like a kid in a candy store. He was just walking around like, oh my gosh, is this my life? You know? So being able to see those guys experience this for the first time and being able to soak up the knowledge from some of the best in the league and how they're interacting and how they're taking it all in. That's what I love to see, because I could, you know, it really is such a milestone and an accomplishment in their career. That was probably one of the biggest highlights for me.
So speaking of, you know, you mentioned how hard it is for people to actually make it, unless, of course, you're Jacob Mizorowski, who's five games into his career and he gets the chance to do it. But nevertheless, somebody who I think had an argument, unfortunately, because of his situation, I think Adrian Hauser certainly could have had the opportunity to make his case to be an All-Star this year. He starts tonight. What do you think, Adrian? Do you think Adrian Hauser is in a good mindset as the second half of the season begins here for him and the White Sox?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think composure and his confidence is one thing that has really stood out. And, you know, we asked him after his last start, you know, are you kind of surprised that you're playing this well? And he was like, no, not really, only because of the mechanical changes that he made this offseason and just where he is mentally. You can tell he's just so confident in his game. And, you know, adding some pitches and in the mix to his arsenal, the changeup man has been so good. And you can tell, like, he's the real deal, right? Like, this isn't a fluke. Like, you talk to Dan Plesac, we were talking to him. He's like, man, you can tell, like, this guy is the real deal. He really has found his way, and it's been so much fun to watch the length that he's been able to give this team to. Hopefully he can just continue that here tonight. But, you know, it's funny, the biggest takeaway from his last start is this puke and rally. I don't know if you heard about this, Jeff. I'm sure you did. Yeah. And, you know, I guess this has been an ongoing thing. He said he's done it five times throughout his career, started all the way back in Milwaukee. And so I'm going to keep an eye out. I'm right next to the dugout. We'll see. It's pretty hot here today at Pittsburgh. So we'll see if we get a little puke and rally from Adrian here tonight.
Well, yeah, it certainly hasn't deterred him, because even though he has lost it a couple of times, he's certainly performed well. He actually leads the American League and ranks third in Major League Baseball with a 1.65 ERA since May 20th. So he has been absolutely extraordinary. Great find for the White Sox organization. He will be caught today by Kyle Teal, who is hitting in front of Luis Robert Jr. What are your thoughts about the performance that Luis Robert Jr. had last night? It was an all-around game, Brooke. He, you know, I think he played his best game of the season pretty unquestionably, and also had that great defensive play. What was the talk around the clubhouse today about his performance last night?
I mean, everybody was just like, he's that dude, right? And like seeing him perform like that, you could just tell how much it energized the rest of the group, because, you know, everybody knows his potential and what he can bring. I mean, I agree with you. I think that was his best game all around, all season long. And you can see the impact that he can have. I mean, look at the final results last night. Look at the box score. And so, you know, I think Luis, you know, he mentioned what an all-star break can do just to mentally reset. He's like, it's one thing to, you know, to talk about it, but then just to actually have those days off just to kind of decompress and to really process like what you're trying to do. I think a lot of people can underestimate what that can do for you. But he said, you know, I've been talking about capitalizing on the mistakes and at the plate. He said that's what he did. And so hopefully he can continue that momentum. But it was funny hearing from Jonathan Cannon last night. I'm sure you saw his reaction after Luis made that catch in center field. And Jonathan was, he came up to him and he said, hey, hey, you're my favorite player. he said, I have no doubt when Luis is back there, he is by far like the best center fielder that has ever played behind me. And he proved that last night. Man, he was so good. So we'll see if he can continue that here today. Hopefully he's turning that corner.
Yeah, pretty extraordinary. Brooke Fletcher covers the White Sox for CHSN. You obviously see her on all the broadcasts. You know what's crazy, and I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit, Brooke, but if you didn't see it, obviously no big deal. I think as good a play as it was by Luis Robert Jr. last night, some of it might have got lost nationally because I don't know if you happened to see, you mentioned your hometown Atlanta. Did you see the throw that Ronald Acuna unleashed last night?
Oh, my. It was insane. I had to watch that a couple of times. I was like, did he really just throw from where he did? That was crazy. I don't know how his arm was feeling today, but that was impressive. And that's, I mean, again, why that guy is in the all-star game and why he is who he is. He's just an incredible outfielder. That was an awesome play.
Brooke Fletcher joining me for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. So what was the atmosphere like yesterday and a little bit today after a big win, you know, 10-1, White Sox really did play well in every facet of the ball game yesterday, and hopefully they continue to build on that. What was, though, the atmosphere like inside the clubhouse? You mentioned having some time off for the players. Does it feel like they're re-energized, recharged?
It does. And, you know, I think, again, the 4 days can, 4 or 5 days, it can do a lot just for a mental and a physical reset. You can tell certain guys have a little bit of pep in their step, Luis Robert Jr. being one of them. But, you know, and also just the importance of starting. You know, you have to forget about the 90-something games before, right, before the All-Star break. And it's like, it's a new half, and I think they have that, you know, that mindset. And Will has talked about just the way that they're approaching guys and the way that they're trying to get certain points across. You know, he's talked about being ready for the fastball. And he's like, you know, we preached that in the first part of the season. He's like, maybe it wasn't received the right way. And so, you know, as a manager and as a staff, he's like, we're trying to find different ways just to kind of get through to these guys. And so, you know, just as much as the players are adjusting, managers and the coaching staff, they're adjusting as well. And so they're just trying to find that right recipe to succeed. And hopefully this is the start of something new for this group, and that they really are just working together. And it's going to be a very fruitful second half.
Brooke, as always, I know you're really busy, so I really appreciate you carving out some time for us. Thanks so much. And we'll watch you on the broadcast tonight.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you.
That is Brooke Fletcher again of CHSN. If you're watching White Sox games, obviously you see her doing a great job covering your White Sox. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly, and you heard Mike Shirley talk about Billy Carlson's personality. It absolutely is magnetic, and we're going to let you hear from the White Sox first-round pick here in a moment when we come back on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19 each, family member gets one ticket, a hot dog, a drink, a bag of chips, cookie, plus a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. That includes all your fees. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. When we come back, we'll let you hear from the newest member of the White Sox, Billy Carlson, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox and Pirates game number 2. First pitch comes your way at 5:40 tonight as the White Sox look to start a winning streak after winning last night 10-1. Hey, Sox fans, enter the Married in a Minute contest for a once-in-a-lifetime chance to get married during the game at Rate Field on Bill Veeck Night, Saturday, August 9th. One lucky couple will have 1 minute for one unforgettable I do. Don't wait. Submissions close July 25th. To enter, visit whitesox.com/wedding. The White Sox selected shortstop Billy Carlson from Corona High School in California with their first pick, the 10th overall, in the MLB draft last Sunday. Carlson was ranked by MLB.com as the 7th overall prospect and the 4th infielder in the draft. Carlson batted .365 with a .517 on base and a .647 slug, 4 doubles, 6 homers, 34 RBIs, and 33 runs scored, along with an .1164 OPS over his 31 games in the high school season. Billy Carlson met the media after being drafted, and as I mentioned, he certainly exudes personality.
Billy, how's it going?
Good, man. Excited to be a White Sox.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, your name was one of the ones prominently mentioned at number 10 there with a few other shortstops. What did you know about the White Sox? And did you have a good feel that they were going to be the one?
Yeah, I had a good idea going in, but honestly, it was just a wild draft, so I was keeping my eyes peeled for everyone. But yeah, it was just crazy stuff, and I honestly didn't even know that they were going to take me. So I was just in shock as much as you guys were. So it was exciting and just celebrating with the whole fam. So yeah.
What do you know about the organization and kind of your? I know it literally just happened an hour ago, but your fit going forward.
I don't know much, so I'm open to learning and getting down to Chicago and learn some stuff and sign that contract. So super excited.
You talked about having a pretty good idea. They were interested. Just how much did you get to meet them and understand what how they viewed you as a player?
Yeah, got to do a few workouts with them. I got to meet like the whole kind of staff and stuff. So I felt like I showed pretty well. So I think they were impressed from what they saw and they chose me for their first pick, so I just feel super blessed and I'm super excited to kind of take this next step.
What did you feel like showed well? Like what made you feel like you had played really well in front of them?
We did it at University of Tennessee, so at kind of my where I was committed for college. So I was hitting a few bombs, so I was pretty confident that I performed well, and I think they thought the same.
Hey Billy, congrats. A lot of people have talked about. You as a defensive prospect, that you're one of the better defenders in this draft class. Just what has kind of gone into developing that aspect of your game, and just how confident are you on that aspect?
Yeah, no, yeah. My mom's Latin, and we got a lot of Latin heritage, so I think that kind of takes care of itself. I think it's pretty natural and just kind of God given. So, not too much work, but just a lot of it's God given and just natural. So,
Your high school made some history today with 3 first round picks. How far back do you go with those guys? Did you know them when you were little kids, or did you kind of just meet up in high school?
No. Yeah. I met Seth. It was pretty crazy. I met him on the video game through another friend, but, I knew of him, played against him in the travel ball and stuff. But, been knowing him since I was 13 years old. And ever since then, he kind of joined my travel ball team. And then the rest is history. He played for my travel ball team for 4 years. And then, obviously joined Corona the last few years of his high school career. So just super happy to just kind of share this moment with him. And as far as Brady goes, I didn't really know Brady. I mean, I obviously knew him from the summer circuit and playing against him and playing with him. But it got real close with him once he transferred over to Corona. So just saw his name called and was super stoked for him and his family. So,
hey, Billy, congratulations. Just overall, what was it like when you heard your name called at number 10?
Ecstatic, man. I was just so happy and just seeing all my hard work pay off and just kind of giving it to God and letting him kind of do his thing. So yeah, just super excited and excited to kind of get to work and help the White Sox win some games.
Everyone dreams of a moment like this, but just when that moment happens, what was it like and who were you able to share it with?
Yeah, my mom wanted to keep a small party, but my dad, he loves everyone, so he invited pretty much everyone he knows. But so we shared it with a good amount of people, but the family was there and kind of just soaking it all in with them and giving big hugs and giving some love. So that was awesome. It definitely got emotional.
Hey, Billy, on our kind of MLB.com get to know you profile, it says Mike Trout's your favorite player. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of obvious reasons for him to be your favorite player. What do you like about him in a few things in particular that you can kind of relate to?
Yeah, it's funny. I have a funny story about him. I was a little kid and kind of at a spring training game in Arizona, and I think they were playing the Rockies at that time. But, yeah, he had just got a few knocks, and I think he got out one of the at-bats, but he kind of got jammed up a little bit. And he was walking out, and I guess he had cracked that bat in that at-bat. So he pulled that bat out of his bag and kind of handed it to me. So Just super special moment for me as far as when I was a kid, like Mike Trout is the GOAT, and I looked up to him a lot. So just being able to have that little connection with him too was awesome. So ever since then, I've been a huge Mike Trout fan.
When you hear, defense, and they've talked about you as, you know, I mean, projecting you out as like a gold glove type player, but do you also want to throw out there that you can hit the ball a little bit too? You said you hit some bombs in the Tennessee workout. So
no,
I think you get labeled as a defensive first, they forget about offense type of thing.
No doubt. Yeah, I think it gets slept on a little bit. Like, I feel like this spring I showed I can bang with the best of them and really have some thump for my size. So, yeah, just super excited to get to prove that and show that these next few years. And, yeah, just super stoked, and I'm ready to get to work. So, yeah.
Just what do you feel like – what things did you do or kind of develop this year that makes you feel like you're getting into your power and seeing it? What do you feel like you've grown at as a hitter this season?
Yeah, I kind of got into some new coaching, got some new coaches that I kind of worked with when I was real young, but getting them back into the development of my career was huge. And like, I feel like with them, we're barely scratching the surface as far as the hitting side. So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of good years coming with the stick, and I don't think that's needs to be a worry for anyone. I think it's going to be a fun road.
On the defensive side, have you always played shortstop? And you know, what about it are you really passionate about that it's become such a, you know, a skill of yours?
Yeah, I've been doing it since I was 6 years old. I've been the shortstop of my team and kind of just trying to perfect that craft and be the best defensive shortstop I can be. You know, I take a lot of pride in pitchers liking to have me at shortstop. So I have a lot of friends that are pitchers and we bond pretty well. So I think they like having me and I like having them on the mound too. So,
Billy, you pitched a little bit in high school. Is that something you want to pursue as you go forward to be the two-way player? Or are you happy with just playing shortstop and focusing on that?
I'm not opposed to it. I mean, I could do it. I definitely could do it with the best of them. But yeah, I think I think I'm going to take pride in being an everyday player and impacting the game every day. So if we need an out in a big game, I think I could do it. But I probably won't be getting called in, but I could do it. I might do a little Kike Hernandez thing, but instead of throwing real slow, throw it harder, you know?
I asked you about the White Sox. What do you know about Chicago? Anything about the city itself?
You know, it's funny that you say that. So my mom has a really, really big family. She's Mexican, and they have a lot of families in Mexico. And we always had a lot of family in Chicago. And it's crazy that now I'm coming to Chicago and how God works. But yeah, it's cool to just kind of – I have a lot of family there, you know, that I don't even really know that well. So getting to know them these next few years will probably be pretty awesome.
Just in knowing, like, you're the – you know, you and Seth are kind of first high school teammates to be taken top 10. Is that – what's your reaction to that? Is that something you had any notion was possible, you know, going into the season?
Yeah, there were some talks about it, but honestly, I wasn't even thinking about it. I was honestly just rooting for him and his family. So hearing his name called was super awesome. And then obviously hearing my name called not too long after was huge. And I FaceTimed him. I just got off FaceTime with him not too long ago and was just talking to him and how happy he was. And we were just kind of like shedding a little bit of tears and just happy tears. And we're just both excited to see how our careers are going to unfold. But super happy for him and his family. And wish nothing but the best for him.
You know, you mentioned getting excited to start your pro career. When did it kind of come in your mind that like starting your pro career was going to be an option for you and something you wanted to do, you know, going to, you know, at any point through the end of this year?
Yeah. I think, as far as like, I always had a dream that I could do it. You know, I always was watching Quick Pitch when I was 5 or 6 years old in my parents' room every night and just envisioning myself making that play or hitting that home run in that big situation. So, as far as the dream, I definitely seen it for a long time. But when I really knew it could really happen was probably after my junior year of high school. I had a really good year and was like, I could probably do this. And seeing I had a teammate, Ethan Schiefelbein. He's actually here right now. He got drafted last year. And seeing him do that and kind of pave the way was big. And, I was trying to do the same thing. So, yeah.
Awesome. Billy, congratulations again. And thank you for taking the time.
Awesome. I appreciate you guys. Who did the White Sox pick with their next pick? I just saw it. I know they were up, but I didn't get to see it.
It was Fosky.
Jaden Fosky?
Yeah.
Okay. I know him. Cool. I just wanted to know that.
You have a scouting report yet?
I haven't seen him play too much, honestly. He kind of burst onto the scene late last summer, and I was like, oh, this guy's a dog, but I didn't really know too much. But, yeah, I know I met him before, a great kid, and super happy to have him as a teammate.
There you go. You got a scouting report from Billy Carlson on his newest teammate, Jaden Fowski, who actually is a local kid, attends high school at Nazareth Academy in LaGrange Park, my neck of the woods. And we're actually going to let you hear from Jaden Fowski here coming up next because it is a great story. Grew up a White Sox fan, was on the White Sox area code team, and they selected him with the 44th overall selection. So we're going to let you hear from Jaden Fowski. Also have some A.J. Pierzynski from the 2005 reunion weekend last Friday night. So we'll share a bunch with you coming up on White Sox Weekly as we get set for your pregame coverage of White Sox and Pirates. Game number 2 coming your way this evening. Pregame coverage officially begins at 5 o'clock, but we'll have a 5:40 first pitch as well. I'm Jeff Meller. We'll let you hear from the local product who was drafted by the White Sox, his favorite baseball team, Jaden Fowski. We'll do that next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Waddle and Sylvie, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Happy Saturday. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. We do it each and every Saturday for 2 hours prior to our pregame show, which will be at 5 o'clock today, and then first pitch coming your way at 5:40 between the White Sox and Pirates game number 2 of 3 at PNC Park after the White Sox won the opener of the second half of the season. They'll try and start a win streak tonight behind Adrian Hauser. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Tuesday, July 29th for Seinfeld night. Receive a limited edition Robin Ventura Seinfeld-themed bobblehead when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Mentioned Jaden Fowski before we broke last segment as he was the White Sox 44th overall pick, the second rounder, their second pick in the Major League Baseball draft. And Fowski is a local kid, grew up rooting for the White Sox, was a member of the White Sox area code team, attends Nazareth High School, and the White Sox selected him with their second round pick. And Jaden Fowski met the media shortly thereafter he was selected. And I figured we'd bring some of that to you because a lot of people who are probably driving around listening right now may be familiar with Jaden Fowski, one of the newest members of the Chicago White Sox.
You know, the reports were that you grew up a Sox fan, so, and probably still are. So what does it mean to be actually drafted by the team with a chance to, sooner than later, as you hope, play for the White Sox?
It means everything. It means the world to me.
Did you grow up, and if you grew up a White Sox fan, who were your favorites? And, you know, how young were you when the fandom began, do you think?
Probably as young as I can remember. I mean, dad and brother are diehard Sox fans. Grew up, I liked Adam Eaton, Alexei Ramirez, Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, Sal Garcia, all those guys.
And you had a former White Sox player and a Hall of Famer, for that matter, coach you as, you know, in Lee Milano's program there at Nazareth. What did it mean to work with Jim Thome? What did it mean to learn? What did you learn from Jim Thome? I know it's probably hard to sum up in a few words, but what did it mean to you overall?
I mean, having Jim in my corner was a blessing. And obviously, he's still going to be in my corner. So very grateful for that. Learned a lot from him. How to handle yourself, be a good person on and off the field.
Hey, Jaden, where do you live? What's your hometown?
Willowbrook.
Okay, Modest Buzelis country. You didn't happen to know him, did you?
I do. His dad is good friends with my dad, so I see Mr. Buzelis all the time in here.
Jaden, just what were you happy with about, you know, what progress you made offensively this season?
I changed my body, cut down a little bit. Increased my mobility and explosiveness, and that really translated on the field for me. The leanest I've ever been right now, worked really hard on that. Lean without sacrificing exit velo or bat speed or anything like that. In fact, they've all gone up despite dropping a little bit of weight. So I'm really happy about where I am right now.
How much of that was about moving to center field, and also did you see it pay off?
Definitely. That was a big part of it. Wanted to prove that I could play center. Not just be a hitter who could play in the outfield. And yeah, I really worked on my speed.
So I guess I just want to know a little bit about your background, like really early growing up. Like, how was baseball introduced to you? And it's kind of a softball of a question, but like, what does the game mean to you on a personal level?
Yeah, so I grew up, my older brother played baseball. He played at the University of Chicago in Hyde Park, and kind of grew up going to his tournaments, watching him play. And so I've played since I was probably five. I mean, as long as I can remember, and kind of picked it up from him. And then baseball for me is everything. I mean, it's my passion. It's what I love to do. I love competing and I love working for it. I don't have to motivate myself to go hit in the cages or go lift. It's something that I wake up and I love to do.
Is your brother someone that you've kind of had like a competitive relationship with? Like you see him do something and then you're like, all right, I'm going to try to be better than him at this someday. Or like, how do you describe your relationship with your brother when it comes to baseball?
A little bit. I would say not as much competitive, but for me, more of like emulating what he did. He's 8 years older than me, so there's a pretty significant age gap there. But trying to be like him, he always had a great work ethic. So kind of following in his footsteps, just being a hard worker.
Hey, Jaden, congratulations. Do you get the chance to go to many Sox games?
I do go to Sox games quite frequently.
Well, and just what is having the opportunity now to possibly play at Wrigley Field, just what does that mean to you getting this opportunity as well?
It's a dream come true. I mean, you think about that when you're sitting in the stands from when I was 12 years old. Like, I want to be wearing these uniforms. I want to be playing on this field one day. And to see that materialize, it means everything.
Kind of a follow-up question from Lamond. Do you have any significant memories from going to a Sox game? Like, was there, like, a player that hit three home runs or threw, like, a complete game shutout? Do you have, like, a favorite Sox game or memory growing up?
I got to be the ball boy. Or the bat boy for BP when I was maybe 10 or 11. I got a bunch of pictures of it somewhere, but I got to go find that. I was on the field before the game. I think I got a few autographed balls. Another moment is Bobby Jenks threw me a baseball after he threw out the first pitch. So that was a cool moment.
What was kind of the point of in playing that you started to realize that like going to and playing the professional level is a possibility, and what I guess changes your routine did that bring when you had that realization you wanted to go for that?
Yeah, I would say the summer after my sophomore year of high school was when I was really playing on the national circuit all summer and kind of realized like I'm one of the best players here, and realized I can do this for a living, and it's what I want to do for a living. And then as far as routine changes go, really the last year and a half, I talked about how I changed my body and really just taking the small things more serious. Routine of the diet, getting better sleep, hydration, changing the way I went about my lifts, all of that. And it's definitely changed my game.
You know, you've played for arguably probably the best high school program in Illinois the last 3 years.
Definitely.
What is winning championships? What does that culture kind of build for you as a player too? I think you won two of the last three, right, at Nazareth?
Yeah, winning's the best feeling. There's nothing better than that. And, you know, I was born in 2006, 1 year before the White Sox won it. So we want to bring that back to Chicago.
You know, I've asked Jim. Jim told me a while ago about how the players react to him. You know, when he comes in, do they ever ask him about, you know, old home runs he hit or about – who he faced and that kind of thing? Is he just kind of, you know, a coach, you know, Landon's dad and a coach for you guys pretty much? I mean, do you kind of separate the Hall of Fame baseball career from the guy who, you know?
Yeah, he's the most humble person you ever meet. So he's never, unless you're picking his brain, he's never bringing up anything like that. But he still hit BP sometimes. He had a fungo bat and he was just launching balls into the forest. I feel like he could still probably hit 20 homers if you wanted to play right now.
Jaden Fowski, the 44th overall pick in the second round by the White Sox, first pick of the second round this year. Local kid from Willowbrook, who plays baseball for Nazareth Academy in LaGrange Park. Pretty cool to hear a lifelong White Sox fan get drafted by the team that he played on for their area code team. So I love stories like that, and hopefully he can be a prodigious corner outfielder, maybe even center field. I don't know, but it seems like he's most likely to shift to a corner outfield spot. So cool to hear him and Carlson both be very excited about getting drafted by the White Sox. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll let you hear from AJ Pierzynski, who had a fun time holding court last weekend at Rate Field as he was in attendance on both Friday and Saturday for the Burley statue unveiling and the reunion. We'll let you hear what AJ had to say. And if we have time, we'll also let you hear from Len Casper, who joined Waddle and Sylvie, had some interesting things to say about the second half of the year. We'll do that next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com/timeout today for 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/timeout.
Hey, this is David Kaplan. I love the heat. Give me 90 degrees and a chance to be outdoors, and I'm a happy guy. But when you step out of the heat and into your home or business, I totally appreciate being able to control the temperature to make everybody comfortable. My friends at Atomatic keep your AC system running its best no matter what Mother Nature throws at us. And if something were to break down, Atomatic can help find the best system for your space and have it back to the perfect temperature in no time. Go to Atomatic.com. That's Atomatic.com.
Steinhoffel's 7th Chicagoland Superstore is now open at Merrillville Plaza in Merrillville, Indiana. For over 90 years, we've helped families create the homes of their dreams, and now we're proud to be part of yours. Steinhoffel's has all the top furniture and mattress brands, styles for every taste, prices for every budget. So come on in, discover the selection, the service, the savings. Discover the Steinhoffel's difference, now in Merrillville. Relax, it's Steinhoffel's.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. A real friend. The kind of friend you want to thank. And not just with a card or a text, but with a song.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
From your friends at the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
There's a spark in every child, a spark of energy, of curiosity, of possibility. But too many Native American children face poverty and life in survival mode, putting the childhoods they deserve out of reach. They need a safe and supportive place to grow, a place like St. Joseph's Indian School.
You don't have to worry about where your next meal's coming from. You don't have to worry about somebody coming in and hurting you. Here you can just be a kid that plays basketball, or a kid that plays on the playground, or a kid that does art, and they can really work on themselves and be who they're meant to be.
For almost 100 years, St. Joseph's Indian School has served a greater purpose beyond the classroom, caring for children in mind, body, heart, and spirit, turning the spark in every child into a lifelong flame and a brighter future.
You help light a spark in a kid, and it feels so good. You just want to light a spark in every kid.
Light a spark today at stjo.org.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for your pregame coverage coming your way at 5 o'clock between the White Sox and Pirates at PNC Park in Pittsburgh tonight, game number 2. Before we get there, though, I wanted to let you hear from AJ Pierzynski. Always great to listen to AJ talk about anything baseball related, but specifically teams that he was a part of. He was instrumental in the White Sox winning the 2005 World Series championship. We had reunion weekend last Saturday and Friday at Rate Field, and AJ joined he was in the festivities and talked to us, the media, the assembled media, and I thought he had some interesting things to say that I wanted to bring to you. So here is AJ Pierzynski last Friday night ahead of the Mark Burley statue unveiling.
To me, the biggest thing about it was the White Sox, you know, Red Sox won the year before, and everybody said, oh, it's been 86 years, but people forgot that the White Sox had been longer. And also, you know, Houston, people also forget they were in the National League at the time. Right? They're now in the American League, sorry. And it wasn't a huge marquee matchup of White Sox and Astros, but to those two fan bases, it was huge. And I think it's just easy to swipe it under the rug because, the White Sox, cute story. You know, we'll move on, you know, to back to the Yankees or Red Sox, whatever. And at the time, and I just think people forget because they just don't – people don't do their job like they're supposed to, and they don't look into the history. And I just said, I'll take that team against pretty much anybody. I mean, 11-1 in the postseason, 4 complete games in the LCS. You'll never see that again. Wire to wire, 99 wins. And, you know, we beat the Red Sox. We beat the Angels. They had the MVP. They had the Cy Young that year. Beat the Astros.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for your pregame coverage coming your way at 5 o'clock between the White Sox and Pirates at PNC Park in Pittsburgh tonight, game number 2. Before we get there, though, I wanted to let you hear from A.J. Pierzynski. Always great to listen to A.J. talk about anything baseball-related, but specifically teams that he was a part of. He was instrumental in the White Sox winning the 2005 World Series championship. We had reunion weekend last Saturday and Friday at Wright Field, and AJ joined, he was in the festivities and talked to us, the media, the assembled media, and I thought he had some interesting things to say that I wanted to bring to you. So here is AJ Pierzynski last Friday night ahead of the Mark Burley statue unveiling.
To me, the biggest thing about it was the White Sox, you know, Red Sox won the year before, and everybody said, oh, it's been 86 years, but people forgot that the White Sox had been longer. And also, you know, Houston, people also forget they were in the National League at the time. Right? They're now in the American League, sorry. And it wasn't a huge marquee matchup of White Sox and Astros, but to those two fan bases, it was huge. And I think it's just easy to swipe it under the rug because, the White Sox, cute story, you know, we'll move on, you know, to back to the Yankees or Red Sox, whatever. And at the time, and I just think people forget because they just don't – people don't do their job like they're supposed to, and they don't look into the history. And I just said, I'll take that team against pretty much anybody. I mean, 11-1 in the postseason, 4 complete games in the LCS. You'll never see that again. Wire to wire, 99 wins. And, you know, we beat the Red Sox. We beat the Angels. They had the MVP. They had the Cy Young that year. Beat the Astros, had Hall of Famers all in that roster. So I think that team was great, and we just had something, and I think that people overlooked that sometimes because, you know, we didn't have a Hall of Famer on the team. We had a lot of really, really good baseball players.
When you signed as a free agent, did you think this team had the capability to do what it did?
No, I'll be honest. No, I didn't. I thought we could be good. I came up with Minnesota, so I played against the White Sox, and I saw the moves that they were making before that. And I remember when I signed, I talked to my wife. My wife was like, what do you think? And I said, well, they have Jermaine. They already have El Duque. I know I've seen Contreras pitch. I knew Canerico. I knew Burley. I'd faced Garland a million times. And I was like, this team has potential to be pretty good. And then Kenny was talking to me about bringing in Iguchi and making some other moves. And I was like, if they can make these moves, they got a chance to be pretty good. And we'll see. Now, did I think we'd do what we did? Unless you're on, you know, the Dodgers now, I don't think a lot of people say, well, if I just show up to spring training, we're going to go to the World Series. No, but I thought we had a chance to be good. And the whole goal for me was, again, I was traded from Minnesota. I was like, I just want to beat the Twins. You know, I want to win the division because the Twins got rid of me, and I'm now on the rival, and I want to beat them. So once we kind of got it rolling, though, and we saw that what we could do, then you kind of got the feeling that no one could stop it. It was awesome.
Aside from my shirt, does it seem like 20 years since you last won the World Series?
Your car also gives it away.
My car is 20 years old.
Yes, exactly. Does it seem? Yeah, I mean, trust me. You know, you talk to these guys and look at all the gray hair. Yeah, it does seem like it's 20 years. But you know, a lot of us have kept in touch. A lot of us still speak a lot with each other. So, not really. I don't know. It's weird because what's funny to me. Sorry, excuse me. Is my kids? My daughter was born in September of 2005. So. But my son wasn't born, so he's asking me questions now. He's 18, so he's asking me all these questions, and the videos come out on YouTube, and so he wants to watch them, and then he has a million questions about this and that. And now when I watch it, I'm like, man, I forgot about this or I forgot about that. And by the way, they could have found better actors to play Rowan and Creedy, and I'm just going to say that for the record. To me, it was, yeah, does it seem like 20 years? No, but at the same time, when you look back and I say, man, my son wasn't even born. Now he's going to college. Yeah, it's a long time ago.
You mentioned Burley, just what does he need to say?
He's lost a lot of weight. I think he did. I think he dyed his beard too. Where is he? I got to ask him what he's using. Yeah, listen, Mark's always obviously one of our favorites, everyone's favorite. He looks great. I haven't seen him for a while. I've talked to him a little bit here and there. You know, he kind of goes into hiding at times. There's times where you text him, you don't hear back from him. Where were you? I was camping for 4 days. Oh, okay. But no, he's great. I'm happy for him to get his statue tonight. It's well deserved. We got to get Ozzy next, though. I mean, that's we got to figure out a way to get Ozzy next. That's my thing. But I'm happy for Mark, and I want Mark to enjoy this with his family, and I'm happy we're all here to see it.
What was it like catching him?
Fast, which was the best. He was one of my favorites. You know, there was many times where you wouldn't even put a pitch call, and I'd just be like, throw whatever you want because your stuff sucks so bad, I'll catch it anyways. And he would laugh. And we had Jermaine Dye calling pitches from right field some games. I mean, we did a lot of crazy things that you would probably not want to recommend to people to do nowadays, but we did it and we got away with it. And Mark was the best. Mark didn't shake. He got the ball. He didn't do scouting reports. He just got it and threw it. And that's the way I wish all pitchers were. You look at a guy like Chris Sale, that's what he does because he learned from Mark. John Danks was like that. He learned from Mark, right? And Mark was just, he was the best. I mean, he was so fun to catch. We prayed for him on getaway day because we knew he'd be under 3 hours. And now, you know, now it's changed. He'd probably be under an hour and a half with the pitch clock now. But it was just, he was a great teammate and a great guy. And I couldn't be happier for him.
AJ, you mentioned you knew you were going to be good going into this season. Was there any point during the season when you were like, yeah, I think we got this. We're going to win the World Series.
No, not until you do it. Not when we got up 3-0, I was like, all right, we got this. But when Jeff Blum hit the homer was when I was like, okay, we got this. No, because, listen, I when I came over here, I had been to the playoffs a couple times, and we had lost. In 2002, I lost to the Twins and the Angels. 2003, we lost to the Yankees, and we had really good teams. And I was thinking, like, oh, we're going to win the World Series. We never did. 2004, we missed. I was with the Giants. We missed on the last day of the year, right? So you're, like, heartbroken. We didn't make the postseason. I thought the postseason was easy to make because I was like, oh, I make it every year. It's easy. And then I come over here, and we were just really good. In the moment, early in the year, we had something. And you could tell we had something special with Pods and the way our pitchers were pitching. Pods getting on base, and then the way the guys would drive him in. Aguchi would do his job, guy would drive him in. We were winning close games. We had a great bullpen. We played great defense. But then, you know, once you get in the second half, you're like, okay. And then when Creedy hit the home run against Cleveland, like, all right, we're going to win this division, which is cool. And then you get to the playoffs. And the biggest game for me was game one against Boston when we hammered them. And because I remember before that game, the guys were, like, so nervous because we didn't have a lot of guys that had played in the postseason. I was like, what is wrong with all y'all? Like, oh, I didn't sleep because I'm like, dude, it's the same thing. We went out and scored like 5 in the first. And then you could just feel like a huge sigh of relief off the whole team. And then from there in the playoffs, it just built and built and built. And once Blum obviously made that swing, it was like, all right, we got this. It's over.
That was AJ Pierzynski at the 2005 reunion weekend. Hey, Sox fans, save all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy $20 weekday and $25 weekend. Select lower level tickets while supplies last. The Summer Savings section is presented by Wintrust. Different approach, better results. Includes fees. Some exclusions apply. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Before we get out of here, Len Casper joined Waddle and Sylvie yesterday, and they asked him specifically, hey, Len, what was your biggest takeaway from the All-Star game?
ABS will be here next year. I'd be shocked if it's not. I think that there's kind of a consensus that that's coming. And I do think it'll be the challenge system, which everybody agrees is probably the best way to go. So I think that is pretty much settled at this point. I think the swing off was a really cool idea for an all-star game, but I would not want to see it in the regular season. The commissioner has talked about more balls in play, more action. And if you created a swing off, I think you'd be kind of getting back to the got to hit the ball over the fence. We're okay with strikeouts, and it might actually affect your roster construction in a weird way. So I would not be in favor of that. You might have a guy who might injure himself trying to hit home runs. So it was really cool to see Kyle Schwarber do what he did, but I don't think I'd like to see it in the regular season anytime soon.
Amen. Hey, Len, are you confident that the ABS system is going to be as accurate as it needs to be? I mean, I don't know. It's maybe because I'm technologically challenged, but like every player's strike zone is going to be different. And
they've accounted for that based on height.
Yeah.
All I care about, Tom, is that it's better or more accurate than human umpires, right? And and you're trying to fix the egregious calls. I know there's been talk about a buffer zone. I don't know if you can have a buffer zone. I had that conversation with my partner during spring training, and his point is, but if it's on the line, it's a strike, and if it's outside the line, it's a ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that idea, and that's probably where we have to go.
My
two big concerns, one would be if a home plate umpire has a particularly bad day or night, I don't want to see 15 challenges. That would be super embarrassing. So you might have to actually limit the total amount of challenges. And then I think just the other thing is you don't want to end a game that way. I want to call, you know, called strike three, game is over. And that's one of the issues that I think, you know, you got to take the graphic box out of there. You don't want cheating. So there's some stuff that they'll have to make sure doesn't happen in terms of gaining an advantage. But I think that they'll work those kinks out.
Len, what do you believe is the most intriguing second half story for the White Sox?
Wow. I would say I'll give you a couple of options. Obviously, the trade deadline is always interesting. I don't know what will happen or transpire. Last year, it was obvious when you had, you know, guys like Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham. White Sox have a few veterans that they might consider moving, but that's a question Chris Getz would have to answer. For me, I think position player-wise, you look at the group right now, Teal, Caro, Mydroth, Montgomery, Miguel Vargas to a degree, although he's got more experience, is I still don't know what they are or what they will be, and we may not know by the end of the year what the floor and what the ceiling is for all these guys, but I just want to see the continued development of the rookie position players, and I would also like to see a little more power. Mydroth's not a guy you're going to expect to hit a lot of home runs, but I think Montgomery, Teal, and Caro, maybe in that order, you'd like to see some thump here in the second half.
What about Hauser? What have you heard the White Sox changed about how Hauser became a guy who left a minor league team in Texas and now is pretty much dominating numbers wise? And do you believe that this will continue after what we think will be a trade?
Well, the biggest thing for me is his velocity's up this year. So I think, you know, instead of 93 or 92.5, you see 94.5, 95, maybe even 96. And it really sets up all of his other pitches really well. He hasn't had a bad outing yet. I don't blame Jacob Mizorowski for getting an all-star nod after five career starts. I was really kind of in the middle on Adrian Hauser. Nine starts, was that enough? And after Mizorowski got in, I thought, well, Adrian Hauser should have been an all-star. He's got an ERA of 1.5. It's been one of the great stories here. I have no idea what the trade market is for him. No clue if he'll be here after August 1st. But it has been a pure pleasure to watch him pitch. And I'd be fine if Adrian Hauser's a White Sox for the next couple years.
I completely agree with Len Casper there as he joined Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. Adrian Hauser has been a great joy watching pitch this season. What a find. He reworked his mechanics in the offseason in Oklahoma and has certainly found the results, added velocity, 5-2 on the season with that 1.56 ERA, and he has 8 quality starts in 9 attempts. And as Brooke Fletcher reminded us earlier, he has mastered the puke and rally. So we shall see. Brooke told us that it was warm in Pittsburgh tonight, so should be interesting. Really quick, before we get you set for the pregame coverage, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. That will do it for this edition of White Sox Weekly. Want to say thank you to Brooke Fletcher and of CHSN and Sergio Santos, the Charlotte Knights manager, the AAA affiliate for the White Sox. Fantastic guests and had a lot of fun today. Thank you to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, and Justin Pottinger for producing. Up next, White Sox pregame coverage between the Sox and Pirates. Keep it here, the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.